Period issue for all women.
Hello and welcome to this week's Sunday Chops. Lads, I'm not going to lie to you, I am full on giddy kipper about this one. You may have heard my dulcet tones advertising an Audible book called Period Power. Might even be on this episode. We never know. Anyway, Period Power is an incredible book by Maisie Hill. It's all about women's bodies, particularly the cycle and its associated hormones that dictate, well, pretty much everything, which is, of course, the menstrual cycle. It has genuinely excited and inspired me. And so I was well chuffed when Maisie said she was up for chatting to us, and she did not disappoint. I'm confident that what she has to say will excite and inspire you too, and hopefully make you ever so curious about these incredible bodies we inhabit, but which have had so little research attention. Because, wanna guess? Patriarchy, that's right. Just wait until you get to the bit about the fallopian tube. Mind blown. Hello, we, and by we, I mean me and...
Jen, hello.
It sounded like you said hello to yourself then.
I did, a bit.
Yeah. Me and Jen, hello, are joined by women's health practitioner, birth doula, and go-to authority on all things menstruation, Maisie Hill.
That is me.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you so much for coming in.
Oh, it's great to be here.
So, please tell us about your book, Period Power. What is it about, and why did you decide to write it?
So it's about so much, but the essence of it is that it's a Bible for everything to do with the menstrual cycle, really. It goes over all the ins and outs about what the body gets up to every month or so, however long your cycle might be. Interesting facts about the actual female reproductive system, mm-hmm. but also how to kind of tune daily life to suit where you are in your cycle where possible. It's not always possible, but it does mean that if you've got days that are a bit harder, let's say, then you can plan around them and start to just have a better life, really.
I've got to say, Period Power genuinely excites me. Any spare moment, I've been reading it, it's absolutely brilliant. Just all this stuff that is being talked about women's bodies, and I'm fairly genned up on that kind of thing because I've made it a necessity that I do my research, but so many times I was like, fucking hell, I didn't know that. So why haven't we been told about this before?
Well, the short answer is fucking patriarchy.
Yes.
But it is, and you know, and I did feel, and still do, I'm kind of coming out of the extreme rage I felt whilst I was writing it. But just from the conversations we have or don't have with our family and like peers as we're growing up, we're not taught things at school. Hopefully that's starting to change now. Mm-hmm. Science favours research that's done for men and men's issues.
I'm just going to interject slightly here. So I'm still reading it. I'm about 4/5 of the way through. But I just read the information that when they were starting HRT trials, oestrogen was trialled in like the 1980s, I think.
Yeah.
But then it wasn't trialled on a woman till 1991.
What?
Yeah. They'd just been trialling it on men.
What? Yeah.
What?
I know.
Yeah. How many times a day did you go what to yourself?
A lot. I mean, this has been my world for a long time. So I tend to forget how significant things are. And then someone's like, oh, I read this bit in your book. And like, it's quite a chunky read. It's like, it's 126,000 words. There's a lot of stuff in there. But sometimes I forget what's in there and someone will be like, oh, I read this in your book. I couldn't believe it. And I was like, oh, did I actually get that in there? I forgot. But I think that is one of the more shocking things, that medical trials legally didn't have to include females in them until the early 90s. So a lot of the drugs and things that are out there in the mass market for doctors to prescribe, you know, all of which are valid, by the way, I'm like, self-care and other strategies other than the mainstream options available through medicine, but all of these medicines have their place, but a lot of them just haven't had the basics research, and shockingly HRT is one of them, even though that is a drug that is for women.
Is it the case, I've heard this but I don't know if you are able to confirm or disconfirm, I believe it is the case that a lot of drugs can't be trialled on women of childbearing age because they can't get the insurance to do it?
So basically, women and other people who menstruate are seen as a bit of a nuisance for medical trials.
Thank God you said that, though. What a nuisance.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Just because our bodies fluctuate throughout the menstrual month, and you know, there's an ebb and flow of hormones that have a vast array of actions in the body. So from the researchers and the pharmaceutical company's point of view, that gets harder to test the effects. But actually, that means there's even more reason to test the effects.
You would think, wouldn't you?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So like you said, it's 126,000 words. It is a hefty read, but it's a really easy read. I think you've sectioned it so beautifully. And it's just, I can't tell you how excited I am by this book, listeners. It's incredible. So you talk about the menstrual seasons.
Yeah.
And you talk about the big hitter hormones that women are dealing with each month.
Yeah.
Could you give us, I know you've written 126,000 words about it, could you give us a quick pressy of both of those things, please?
Yeah, the bite-sized version of it all. So the first half of your cycle, so your cycle is from day one of your period to the first day of your next period, so roughly 28 days, although only 12.4% of people have a 28-day cycle.
And it's considered the norm.
Yep, exactly. So the first half of the cycle is from day one of your period to when you ovulate. And the hormone that dominates that half of the cycle is estrogen, which generally makes us... Well, estrogen's job is to try and get us knocked up and laid in, you know, in every cycle, whether you want kids or not.
Who's your comparison?
Fiancé. Yeah. But estrogen... Sassy, social, nailing the dance moves, being out there in the world, being magnificent. Yeah. That is estrogen.
That's how I feel when I ovulate. I don't know about you guys.
Yeah, no, but you do. That's the thing, Jen, you do.
Yeah, as some people don't, and there can be varied reasons for that, but on the whole, that's like the typical quality of ovulation.
So that's from day one of your period to...
So actually... Menstruation, when you have your period, is your inner winter. So this is going on to the seasons of the cycle. So in your winter, when you're bleeding, your hormone levels are pretty low. So you might feel quite fatigued. You might not have much interest in what's going on around you. More interested in Netflix, the sofa, that kind of thing.
You can't hear nodding, but it is happening for me and the Jen. Nod.
And then from about day three, estrogen starts showing up, but like very small levels. So my experience of it is from day three, I'm suddenly like feeling really positive, a lot more energy, but it won't be like that for everyone. Then when you come out of your winter, so your period's finishing and you're heading into the spring season of your cycle, this is pre-ovulation. Mm-hmm. And that's when estrogen really gets going. And that tends to make us like quite curious, playful, suddenly up for like meeting mates, doing things, having creative ideas. This is quite a nice season of the cycle, but some people can feel like shit if they've been flooding and things when they've got their period.
And also the flip side, which is really interesting, the flip side of spring, because spring is telling you to be seen and to find a mate. Yeah. And if you're in a scenario where it's uncomfortable and you don't want to be seen, particularly I'm thinking of young girls when they first start coming on their period, it's your body sending out signals to mates. No matter what sexuality you are, it's still sending out the kind of, we've got to make some baby signals.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that can be uncomfortable. Uh-huh. And especially when, you know, like you're walking down the street and you feel like every man is picking up on you, you know, and it's just like, and you don't necessarily want that.
Damn you, Beyonce.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it happens to me all the time.
And then when you're hitting like pre-ovulation, so this would be like day 12 in a 28-day cycle, that's when estrogen is peaking and testosterone is showing up and you like maybe feeling more daring and competitive, very articulate, able to take on the world. It's a great time for public speaking or going on a first date, that kind of thing. Really good for productivity. After ovulation, you head into the luteal phase of your cycle. I know you want it bite-sized.
No, no. I'm just waiting for who's coming out to play now.
Yeah, so after you ovulate, you start producing progesterone, which is the hormone that dominates the second half of the cycle. You also have estrogen showing up again, but not in the same way that you did in the first half of the cycle. So progesterone is there. It's necessary for conceiving and sustaining a pregnancy. And to that end, it kind of keeps us safer. You know, it's like in case you did conceive, keeping you indoors, being a bit more reflective.
It's almost a nesting kind of hormone, right?
And it can be very nesting. And I was having loads of conversations on Instagram recently because on my story I was saying how, oh, it's like day whatever of my cycle, I can't even remember. And I was just like, I just want to clean. I just like come home and I can just see the mess everywhere and I just want to sort everything out. And that is progesterone.
Yeah.
It's also like my boyfriend not tidying up after himself. But and I think this is the important thing, is we kind of do ourselves a disservice by saying, oh, I'm just PMSing. You know, I'm just noticing things that are wrong in my life because I'm premenstrual. But actually, those things are always there. But estrogen in the first half just makes us gloss over those things. Because
it's like a blurring filter, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because you just want to see how awesome your partner is, you know.
Because you want to get down.
Yeah, exactly. So there can be very different qualities to each half of the cycle. And that premenstrual time equates to the autumn phase of the cycle, which some people feel quite at home in, but others will experience it as quite a rocky time.
Mm-hmm.
There can be a lot of symptoms and issues that show up then.
Have you got a question?
No, I was just going to make a comment about Whiskers adverts, but yeah.
Oh, is that when you start crying at pictures of dogs?
Just anything, really.
Yeah.
Just anything.
Yeah, that's probably like the progesterone drop-off that happens a few days before you actually start coming on your period. So progesterone
could be like a week beforehand.
Yeah. So it's interesting because progesterone can have like quite a calming effect on you, and it can make you, it can help you sleep, for example. So like around day 20, 21, when progesterone is peaking, that's a great time to capitalise on being able to sleep. So that's like not when you want to be working late or like going out. It's like just catch up on sleep. Like most women I know are knackered on some level. So that's the time to just prioritise that. But once progesterone starts dropping off, it can just turn you into a hot mess, basically.
I'm not lying in saying that period power has made me look at some stuff and think about changing the way I do things. So I'm ready to watch you sort of smile and nod. I was put on the pill when I was 16 because I had problem periods that were really heavy.
Yeah.
And since then, I've been on antidepressants on and off as well. And Maisie is just looking and nodding at me. And it's because there's so little understanding of what actually goes on with women's hormones that can lead to problematic periods. And the easiest thing to do with most things is just, oh, just give them a pill and that'll stop it. But it doesn't stop it. It masks it or it completely changes it. So I've been on and off the pill since I was 16 and I'm going to come off it and try and work out what my actual cycle is and try and work with the seasons. Because I absolutely found that when I wasn't on the pill, there would be the period, which is my autumn, and I would get suicidally depressed. And I didn't understand why, but sobbing, just didn't want to be here. And that would last for 2 days. And I went to my doctors. Because I've got that history of depression, they were like, oh, let's... And I'm like, it's not depression, it's something different. I've kept a diary, it's happening before my periods. And the male doctor I went to see said, oh, there is this thing that some women get before their periods. It's called PMT.
Oh, no.
I wanted to slam his nuts in a drawer and just go, I know what that is. I've had it since I was, like, 14. And so the second doctor I went to see said, oh, we just want to put you on the antidepressants. And it took 3 doctors before she said, okay, so let's do it. So you take those antidepressants for a couple of weeks during your cycle and then not and sort of build it up that way.
Yeah.
But there's so much misinformation out there.
There is a huge amount of misinformation out there. So there is this extreme form of PMS, and it is really fucking extreme. It's called premenstrual dysphoric disorder, PMDD. And that is really underdiagnosed, and there's not great help out there for it. There are some fantastic organisations, and there's a great hashtag called PMDD Peeps on social media, and that's a really good way of like figuring things out. But so often, and so many women that I work with will have a similar story to you, say like, oh, I was really anxious, I was really depressed, I was put on medication, and then they started to think, well, maybe it was related to my cycle and it wasn't there all the time. And sometimes these conditions are there all the time, but they can be exacerbated by the premenstrual time. So there can be something called premenstrual exacerbation as well. But there's also things are misdiagnosed too. So sometimes women are diagnosed with rapid cycling bipolar disorder when what they actually have is premenstrual dysphoric disorder.
Right, okay.
So... But, you know, what you did in terms of tracking your cycle is really important, because the more you track in whatever way you want to do it, the more data you have. That means you can have a more accurate conversation with your doctor or whoever, whatever the kind of other professionals you deal with.
And all they're going to tell you anyway when you first go to them is to track it anyway. That's what they do with everything, isn't it? So have you kept a diary of X, Y and Z?
I'm going to use that word again, though. I'm excited. I just come off my pill. I'm trying to work out when my cycle, when to start tracking. I'm in the middle of moving house. It might be after that. I'm going to get a diary. And I'm excited to kind of find out what my body's doing, because it's not felt like I've had the information to do that before now.
I think it's astonishing, like, how little we know about this stuff. Like, it never ceases to surprise me how little we know about
Maisie
it.
Maisie knows loads.
Yeah, well, Maisie does. All right. I find it so shocking. Like, actually, I'm not going to say that because it's probably a bit too gross for our listeners. But, moving on.
Okay.
Yeah.
Intriguing. We'll never know. Do you want to draw it? Draw me a picture.
But it is shocking, because sometimes I have had messages from people who are medical professionals, people who've studied biology at degree level, who are like, why the fuck has no one told me this sooner? And that's the thing, is like, it starts off with like people being amazed. So there's like the range of responses. People read the book and they're like, fucking hell, no one told me that. This is amazing. And then what swiftly follows that is anger.
Fury.
That no one's told them this. Yep. And why am I 26, 36, 46, 56 years old, and I'm only just finding this out?
I'm 42, and part of the reason I'm excited that I found this now, there is the fury that I think it would have changed, or could potentially have changed, so many different pills I've been on and downs I've had. But obviously at 42, it's not going to be too long before I head into the perimenopause, and it sounds like knowing your cycle can be an absolute life changer for dealing with that.
Yeah, totally. It's great preparation for that, because that's when like the wheels can come off a bit, and not everyone has a crap time during perimenopause. So that's the period of time when you have symptoms related to your cycle, but you can get like hot flushes and insomnia, that kind of thing, but you're still having cycles. And then when you hit menopause, that's when you've actually stopped.
So, menopause lasts a day. There you go. Yeah. That's information I did not know before.
Yeah, it marks the 1 year kind of anniversary of having no periods.
Cake for everyone.
But you can actually start getting symptoms of perimenopause from 35 up, you know, so it can happen quite early on. But getting to grips with what your cycle is like now helps you to notice when you are getting those symptoms coming in. And it also means that you are just more equipped to deal with the variations that happen then, because the hormonal changes that happen at menopause force you to face your life in a way that you might not have had to before. And the more you've worked with your cycle and your hormones before that happens, the more able you can deal with it.
I did it off mic, but I genuinely gulped when Maisie said that. I was like, oh God, terror gulp. But no, I think that's it with most things. The more prepared you are, the easier or the smoother you can make the ride, even if the ride itself is still going to be bumpy, if you're just a bit more prepped.
Yeah. So I just think that knowing what's normal for you is really important. This is the gross thing that I wasn't going to say. I'm now going to say it. You don't ever look at, like, what a period is. Do you know what I mean?
You do if you use a moon cup.
Well, exactly.
Yes.
Just hit the mic then. Exactly. And this is when I used a moon cup and I discovered what my period looked like. And I was like, oh, it's a bit different to like how I expected.
It wasn't blue. I thought it was going to be blue.
Well, exactly. I thought it was going to be a very watery blue consistency, and it wasn't. Big shock, guys. But, you know, you just like whatever you're using, you just like whip it out. So you don't even know like what is normal for you. And that could be like quite useful information to have to monitor what's going
on
with your body. It's really shocking the way you're just sort of encouraged to just like, you know, I don't know what that sound effect was, but you know,
that is the sound a moon cup makes when you're removing it.
You're not encouraged to do that. particularly. But
there's a brilliant Kiri Pritchard-McLean line where she says she loves her moon cup because every month she gets to toast the fact she's made it through another one without getting pregnant. Raises that glass.
Oh, hey there, people of Canterbury, people near Canterbury, and people with weekend access to Canterbury. We're bloody coming for you. In the nicest possible way, of course. That's right, our next live event is at the Marlowe Theatre in Canterbury on Sunday the 21st of July, when we're joined by the always excellent Scummy Mummies, Helen Thorne and Ellie Gibson, and socio-political powerhouse Kemar Bob for an hour of fierceness and funnies as part of the Marlowe Comedy Festival. It's gonna be mint, and you can get tickets via our website, www.standardissuepodcast.com, or by going to the What's On section of marlowetheatre.com. Come see us. Let us see you. Yes.
So, Maisie, obviously you have got years and years of experience talking to women about their periods and the related happenings, and you have a very holistic approach to it all, which is incredible. So there's a lot about gut. I also have IBS, so it's, again, really interesting how that all links together. What bit of information consistently surprises your clients?
Oh, that's such a good question.
Thanks, mate.
Oh, the bit that I am always amazed at continually, and whenever I talk about it, I almost like tear up and get goosebumps because I just think it's amazing that our bodies can do this. If you lose function in one fallopian tube, say you have an ectopic pregnancy, something like that, and you lose the function of, let's say, your left, I know this is not great for radio,
Maisie is pointing to her left.
You lose function in your left fallopian tube, and you also lose function of your right ovary. Got it?
Yeah, no, I'm waiting for the facts. I'm
so
already
then
astounded.
Your right fallopian tube can pick up a egg from your left ovary.
What?
It's incredible. How amazing. And I've had clients that this has happened to when they've been undergoing fertility treatment, and they've been having regular scans to see when they're ovulating, which ovary the egg's coming out of, and because they haven't had function in one of their fallopian tubes. And this is backed up by research as well, so there's a lot of research in the book. And it's
fucking
our bodies are amazing, and we're just taught all the time that they're
dirty,
a nuisance, they're something to be disgusted by, shameful, not worthy of any bloody research into actually what goes on with them. And yet when you do the research, you get these amazing scientific gems that I think really help us to feel strong and empowered by our bodies rather than made to feel like we're second best.
You both just said you said disgusted, Maisie, Jen said dirty. Mm. And it is, you kind of brought up to believe that periods are something shameful. And there's a really interesting chapter. It's all interesting. I think I'm stressing it again, guys. It's all really
interesting. It's
interesting, guys. Fascinating. It's exciting. But there's a really interesting chapter about how your experience of your first period absolutely colours how you see periods from then on, or could certainly have a really big effect on how you experience your periods and how you deal with it. Now, I was my mum was a single mum, and she was open, but we didn't really have that many chats, and she just sort of got me some sanitary towels and then told me how to insert a tampon and then just checked I was okay.
Yeah.
But there was never, she didn't make me feel ashamed of it, but she didn't celebrate it either. There wasn't that, oh, you're a woman now kind of celebration. The stigma, particularly outside of Western countries regarding periods, makes it so much harder to talk about this kind of stuff.
Yeah. My mum bought me a present, just saying.
Oh, well, that's nice.
Kudos, Kath. Yeah.
Yeah, that is nice.
And that's the thing. Like, some people will feel sad that they weren't celebrated, or like this transition wasn't acknowledged somehow. And other people will have been dying from shame because, like, they had their mum or auntie hosted them a period party that they really didn't want. So there's a range of experiences. So it's not like there's a perfect way to acknowledge it. It just depends on that particular person and the dynamics of their family and what's going on. But it does have a lasting impact on someone's experience of their cycle, or the beliefs that they have about their body and what their body's capable of. You know, was your body seen as something that was suddenly dangerous because you could suddenly conceive? Mm-hmm. And therefore it was something to be wary of and watched out for and take precautions, be responsible, be a grown up, and you're just like 13 and get your first period and like, what the hell? Yeah. What's my body going to get up to now? Or, you know, was it an expense for your family to have to deal with if there wasn't a lot of money to buy supplies to manage your flow? And suddenly, like, oh, you know, it's such a negative, even if you were feeling good about it, but your family were like, oh, that's another drain on resources that we don't have, then that is going to have an impact. And I think especially like if you've got young people around you in your family and those conversations are starting to happen, it's really important to look back at what your experience was before you initiate those conversations, because you want to, I think, really question what message you're passing on. My mum also gave me a sanitary pad. It was the biggest pad
ever. Oh my God,
ever. You know, when you put it in, you're like, everyone's going to know.
Yes.
I'm waddling down the street. Everyone's going to know. Do I smell? You know, there's all these things coming up. And then years later, when I came to this work and I asked my mum about her experience, she told me the exact same thing. And I was just like, well, why did you not stop and think? Or is it just like some weird initiation in our family? It's your massive pad. Let's see what you can do with that.
This one should last you for 4 years.
Yeah. So I think it's good to reflect on what messages we've received, whether it's from the mass media or from parents or from like just 17, you know, because they all have an impact.
The tagline for Period Power is harness your hormones and get your cycle working for you. You talk about harnessing these hormones as almost a superpower, or they can give you sort of superpowers. So how long does it take to become a menstruating heroine?
Not that long. And yay! I think that's the thing, is that tracking your cycle is really quick and easy to do. It only needs to take like 15 seconds a day if you're just keeping track of your energy, your mood, your behaviour, things that interest you, things that you found hard. You know, it's just quick, just like bullet points.
I love that you said if you're really short for time and you're not sure what you're doing, just one word.
Yeah.
Just one word that sums up your emotions for that day.
Yeah, because I've got a PDF on my website where people can just do that and look at the whole chart on one piece of paper. And that's enough, or a Google spreadsheet, some people do, and it works. And once you've been tracking for like a few cycles, 2 to 3, you start to notice the commonalities that are there. And that's when things get really helpful and predictable, and you're able to plot things into your diary or make adjustments for things that you can't kind of reschedule to suit things. So it doesn't take that long, and it is just about figuring out what is going on for you in each season, where your wobble days are, where you might need extra support, let's say. But yeah, it doesn't take long, and it's so easy, and it's cheap, doesn't cost you anything.
Amazing. And capes are optional, right? You don't have to wear a cape.
No, you don't have to wear a cape, but if you are going to wear one, I recommend one made of massive sanitary pads.
Yeah, I'm going to ask your mum for them. Yeah. And what would you like people to take from Period Power?
I just want people to feel good in their bodies. I think so much is about making us feel ashamed, or like we need to improve ourselves somehow, or, you know, just what's going on is abnormal, you know, because we are the other, women are the other, yeah. Men are the first, mm-hmm. and we come second, largely.
52%, guys.
Yeah.
Just saying.
And that's the thing, I want people to come away feeling understood, but also understanding their bodies and what they get up to, and just feeling ready to play a bit of detective with what goes on for them in every menstrual cycle, and being able to use it to great advantage, because we're getting screwed over on every level, whether it's equal pay, affordable childcare, the orgasm gap, like it's just so many levels that women are getting screwed over. And I think we've got this incredible tool going on in our bodies, and we just have to use it.
I think it's interesting, the point about being ashamed or feeling dirty or whatever, or not feeling good enough, because I think women feel that way about so many things, and we're encouraged to feel that way about so many things. But when you think about it, like, it comes down to something as fundamental as biology that is driving us in that direction. You know, we don't even have to start talking about the fucking Kardashians on Instagram. Like, it's literally there from birth, basically.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't really thought about that before, to be honest.
Well, I think that's another really lovely aspect of Period Power, is it encourages curiosity. And we're not taught, I don't think we're taught to be curious about our bodies.
No.
We're taught to just, you know, stuff's going to happen and you deal with it. as opposed to you investigate why and get excited about why that's happening.
That's very true. And I think especially, you know, the book's called Period Power. It's not all about periods. And that's the thing, is when we talk about the menstrual cycle, the focus is usually on the symptoms that you get that are horrific, or the products that you use to manage bleeding. And we tend to ignore the whole of the rest of the cycle. And there's so much to get out of all the hormonal ebb and flow that goes on. I mean, we're all making great strides anyway, let's face it. But I think if we can use our cycle and our hormones, then we're going to get even further, quicker.
No one talks about Beyonce when they talk about periods.
No. More Beyonce, less bleeding. Is that the message? I've reduced it way too far there.
I think it was on Women's Hour about how do I phrase this? About discharge that women get, this, you know, the slimy stuff.
Basically. Oh, there's a whole thing.
Yeah, yeah. But no one ever, like, talks about that kind of shit. It just doesn't get talked about. And then the Women's Hour thing was, like, that's literally there to help sperm get to, like, where it needs to be. And you're like, how fucking clever is that?
But also,
how
you clever can track, is that? You can track fertility with it. Yeah. You can touch on fertility and what just knowing your cycle can do for fertility.
Yeah. So I had put up a photo of my cervical fluid when it's at its most fertile on Instagram.
How do you know?
And Instagram took it down. So they took it down, and then I put up that they'd taken it down. And then, like, people were just, like, furious, because so many people would be like, I've been to the GP, I thought I had an infection, I've been taking antibiotics, didn't know this was normal. And I, my whole post on it was saying that this is something that we produce anyway. It's not produced as a sexual response. My post was saying, blokes, if you think that someone's ready for penetrative sex because they've got cervical fluid there, they may not be. It's just something that we produce, and I will produce it, like, when I'm sat in a lecture at college or something like that. It's like, it doesn't mean I'm turned on and ready to have sex.
Yeah.
So that was what it was. But then Huffington Post picked up on it, and they ran an article about Instagram taking it down. So then the Instagram image went back up. But then when people were posting the article on Facebook, Facebook kept taking it down, and they won't let people post up because they say it's produced as a result of sexual activity, so therefore it can't be posted. And I'm like, just read
Facebook
the fucking post.
Are misinformed. That's weird.
Yeah, because I was just like, just read the actual post and you'll see it. Anyway, now they're absolutely desperate to apologise to me. They're trying to get me on the phone to, like, talk about doing some educational stuff with them, which is amazing. But yeah, this is just, like, something so basic as that can make such a difference to how we feel about our bodies. Like, why aren't we just taught it?
Maisie, where can people find you?
The best way to stay in contact is through my email list, which is on my website, maisiehill.com. I'm also on Instagram as _maisiehill_.
And Period Power, available from all good bookshops?
It is, totally.
And indeed on Audible, as you probably heard me talking about on an advert on the podcast. And I was like, why aren't we talking to this woman? Let's get her in. So thank you so much for coming in.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's been great.
I'm so excited.
Standard Issue, for all women.